ततो जायामुदीरये नस्ता प्रयेश भद्रेशु नित्यं भगवता सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 4, text 4. Tammaha brataram devi kripana karunam sati snushyeyam tava kalyana Snusheyam tava kalyana Striyam mahantum arhasi Tam mahabrataram devi Kripana karunam sati Snusheyam tava kalyana Striyam mahantum arhasi. Tamaham devi kripana karunam sati snucheyam tava kalyana stiyam mahantum arhasi tam antukamsa aha said Brataram, her brother, Devi, Mother Devaki, Kripana, helplessly, Karunam, piteously, Sati, the chaste lady, Snusha Iyam Tava, this child will be your daughter-in-law. The wife of your future son, Kalyana, O all auspicious one, Striyam, a woman, Ma, not, Hantum, to kill, Arhasi, you deserve. Translation. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa. My dear brother, all good fortune unto you. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. Purport. Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman. Not only a woman, but a small, helpless, newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible, sinful act. Therefore, she told him, "Don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune for you." Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious. But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna, was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. This was natural for her. Omagyanati mirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshirum militam yena tasmai shi urave namaha mukam karoti vacharam pangum langayate girim yat kripatamaham bande shi gurum nirataranam paramanandamadavam shri chaitanya ishvaram. So this is the situation. Kamsa didn't mind to kill a little girl. Although the prophecy said it was a boy who was going to kill him, the eighth child. So it was completely improper on his side to kill the girl, because the girl wasn't prophesied to kill him. It was prophesied a boy will kill him. So there was not even from the demoniac point of view to do it. And besides that, it is prohibited in the scriptures, the Shastra, to kill a woman. It is forbidden. No? So we see now this modern day war, they throw bombs and they kill a lot of women and kids and all this. It's evil, it's evil. Demoniac, no matter how they try to justify it. What the word they use for that? Collateral damage, something? Collateral damage. These are people dying, you know? I mean, what to speak of, you know, abortion, killing the child. Or some places they kill after they are born, because they are a girl, they kill it. Some people, they want to have a girl. This is crazy. Nowadays the world is really mad. And so much sinful activities going on. That's why things gonna get worse and worse. I mean, just because the devotees, they're chanting the holy name all over the world, that's keeping things a little bit, you know, under control. But besides that, it's horrible what is going on. So it is an injunction in the Shastra not to kill a woman. And that's why when Krishna was a baby, Putana came to kill him. She put poison in her breast to kill Krishna. And of course she took a beautiful form, a teenage girl, 16 years old. Nobody had any suspicion that she will do any harm to Krishna. So innocently they handed her the baby. She wanted to carry him. And when Krishna saw him entering his house, he immediately closed his eyes. And the acharyas give three reasons why Krishna closed his eyes. One of the reasons is that he was going to kill her and she was a woman. And since it is in the way that it is prohibited to kill a woman, so that's why he closed his eyes. But since she was a demon, he had to kill her. But he closed his eyes. The other reason he closed his eyes was he was angry at her. He didn't want to see her face because she killed so many children before going to Gokula. Like a witch sucking their blood. And the third reason Krishna closed his eye was to give her assurance that he is a very innocent boy, she can kill very easily. So, to give her, you know, confidence that she can do harm. Anyway, when Krishna started sucking the poison, and then her own life, she was screaming. She ran out of the house trying to push Krishna. But Krishna grabbed her more tightly and was sucking forcibly her life air, you know, from her body. And in that way he killed her. But Krishna is so kind and merciful that he gave her the position as the nurse of his nurse in Goloka, assisting Mother Yashoda. How merciful Krishna is, you know. She came to kill, still he gave her such a high position in the spiritual world. And you know, in Putana, in her past life, she was Bali Maharaj's sister. Her name was Ratnamala. And when she saw Krishna's avatar, Vamanadev, she felt a great motherly love for him. I mean, so much so that she thought, she had a strong feeling that, oh, I wish to have this boy, beautiful boy, as my son. I will give him my breast milk. It's so beautiful. And the Lord in her heart assured her, your desire will be fulfilled. So when Krishna promised something, he fulfilled it. But what happened is that when Krishna took three steps, you know the story, that he came to the devatas, they lost their home, their planets. So, and they prayed to the Lord to give them back their home. So the Lord accepted their prayers, and he was born as Indra's brother. Another name of Trivikram is Indranuja, the younger brother of Indra. So he arrived there because Bali Maharaj was very charitable, he was giving charities to the Brahmanas. So he came there, and okay, Bali Maharaj offered, you're a Brahmana, you ask anything you want. And the Lord said, I only want three steps of land. Square, no? But Bali Maharaj said, that's very little, you know, you should ask more. I can give you much more land, house, you know, grains, gold, whatever you ask me, I can give you. Why are you asking so little? And the Lord said, well, I don't want to be a greedy Brahmana. I want only these three steps, square, because I want to make a kunda for yagya, to make sacrifice for Lord Vishnu. So I don't need more. All right, that's whatever pleases you. But Shukracharya, the guru of the demons, he advised Bali Maharaj not to give him anything. He said, don't give him anything. This is Vishnu in disguise. He's going to take away everything from you. Don't give him anything. But Bali Maharaj didn't follow that instruction of his guru because it was against devotional service. He said, all the yagyas we're doing, to get opulence and power by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, and now Lord Vishnu come and he asked me to deny him, that's not like the right thing to do. So he didn't surrender his intelligence, but he surrendered through his intelligence. So he understood that Shukracharya was wrong according to the scriptures. I mean, guru can't deviate from the scriptures, otherwise not qualified, no? So to speak. Anyway, so to give the charity, they have to do achmana. And they have a kamandalu to pour the water. But Shukracharya, with his power, he was stopping the water from coming out of the kamandalu. The water would not come out. So the Lord took a kusha grass and pierced the the hole inside the lota, you know, and the water came out. And by doing that, he pierced the eye of Shukracharya. Shukracharya's eye was bleeding, you know. Anyway, Shukracharya's concern was his own, well, material benefit, because we are thinking, if my disciple Bali Maharaj lose everything, I also will be out on the streets. I will also lose everything. So it was not convenient for him from the material point of view. That's why he advised this way. But Bali Maharaj became one of the 12 Mahajanas, great Vedic authorities, because he did not deviate from the principle of pure devotional service, which is to surrender to Krishna. So that's why he's considered very advanced pure devotee of the Lord. He's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So anyway, so when Vamanadev accepted the charity, he took Bhishvarupa, universal form. He became super gigantic. And when you walk, suppose you walk first with the right foot, so you walk first. First step, he covered half the universe. The second step, he covered the other half of the universe. And by doing that second step, he opened the hole in the universe. And the water of the casual ocean came in the universe, washing his foot, and became the Ganges River, the holy Ganges River. So when Ratnamala saw that he took everything away from them, she became angry at him. And she thought, oh, this boy took everything from us. If I had poison, I will poison him. So the two thoughts, to be a mother and to poison, came together as putana. But the Lord is so kind and merciful, he accepted only the good part and cleaned her from the evil part. So kind and merciful is Krishna. So everybody ran out of the house to see what's going on. This woman screaming and, you know, with Krishna in her lap. So what is going on? Oh, they make so much noise. Anyway, so when they came out of the house, they saw this girl became a gigantic demon, you know. She was dead, but her body became very big, like 9 miles or something. Amazingly big, you know. So, but Krishna was crawling in her chest like a little baby, like nothing happened, you know. He didn't do anything. So immediately they grabbed him and chanted mantras and smeared him with the dust from the calf's hoof. And it said in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana that a transcendental airplane came from Goloka and took Putana and her spiritual body as a nurse to the spiritual world. And what they will do with this gigantic body there, they were all the farmers, they were coward men, they were cutting it into pieces and burn it. But the smell was fragrant flowers and roses, you know, because Krishna touched her body, became purified. So by burning it was a very nice, beautiful smell. And it just took a little while, you know, to burn all the body. So everything that Krishna touches get purified. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andakara. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like the darkness. Where there is sun, there is no darkness. Where there is Krishna consciousness, there is no ignorance. So, but we see here Kamsa was very much in ignorance because he was afraid to die and he wanted to kill a girl just in case that the prophecy was wrong and instead of a boy was a girl who was supposed to kill him. So he didn't listen to her sister. She was pleading him, "I will give it as a wife to your future son." I mean, how kind is that? I mean, she's telling him, "Brother, my all good fortune unto you." I mean, he's coming, he killed her sons, coming to kill the girl. The girl wasn't her daughter, it was somebody else's daughter. But as a mother, she knows the pain to lose a child. So she didn't want that somebody else will feel the same pain. So she was pleading her brother, "Please don't do it. They will bring you more sinful reactions to your evil life." But Kamsa didn't listen. He was overwhelmed with fear and anger. So he took the baby, was trying to smash it, you know. But she slipped from his hand and she appeared with 8 armored form as Goddess Durga. And she chastised him, "Rascal! The boy is going to kill you. He already took birth somewhere else. You're condemned." Like that. Anyway, that's the pastime. So, any questions? Yes?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. You were mentioning Lord Vamanadeva, when he took those steps, he split the covering of the material universe and the causal ocean leaked in. But I've also heard another understanding of how the Ganges descends. Can you help us understand those two different stories and how they relate together?
Okay. What is the difference? What is the other story?
The other story is, I'm pretty sure, didn't the demigods pray to Mother Ganges to descend from the spiritual world? And then she didn't want to because she didn't want to incur any sinful reactions.
Yeah.
But I think like Lord Vishnu or someone told her that the Vaishnavas bathing in your waters will actually purify you of those sinful reactions. And then she said, I need someone to like hold me. If I descend, the force will be too strong. The universe won't be able to handle it. So Lord Shiva took her on her head.
Yeah, but that is a good bona fide story because it is in the Bhagavatam. But Ganga Devi was already in the heavenly planets when she was asked to come to this earth planet. She was already in the heavenly planets. She already came from the spiritual world. And one great king, he wanted to free his ancestors because they made offense to Kapila Muni. I mean, their father was doing a horse sacrifice, Ashwamedha Yajna. The horse disappeared. I mean, so he sent his sons to look for the horse and who took it. So they arrived at the place where Ganga Sagar, you know, where the Ganges meet the ocean, that's in Calcutta. And there was Kapila Muni's ashram there. So they saw the horse nearby grazing and they immediately jumped to conclusion that Kapila Muni stole the horse. And they were ready to attack him. They already took the horse, but they, not satisfied with that, they wanted to attack him, thinking he's the one, the thief. But it is said that Lord Kapila looked at them and their body became into ashes. They were burned. Some people think because of his sight, but that's not correct. The actual understanding is that the offense itself burned up inside their body, and that way their body were burned because of the offense to harm the Lord. So their descendant What was his name, the king? Anybody remember? Bhagiratha, correct. King Bhagiratha, he wanted to free his ancestors from the sinful reaction they committed. And he was praying to Ganga Devi to come to this earth planet. So then she asked, who will hold me? I don't want to go to Patala Loka, I only earth planet. So, but for that, I need somebody to hold me because I will come with great force. So then the demigod asked Lord Shiva, and Shiva agreed to hold Gangachandra's head. That's how. But she was already in heavenly planets. It is said in the Bhagavatam that they were the demigods to get the benefit of the Ganges River. They were transporting her water in big airplanes to take it from one planet to the other, you know, to share the holy water with other demigods, to take bath, you know, take the benefit. There was one king, maybe Maharaj Jai Singh or somebody else, that he went to England to meet the queen. He went in a boat and he took Ganges water. He will not drink, but only Ganges water. So he had a big silver container, gigantic, for drinking water from the Ganges. Any other question? Yes, please.
I was very much relishing your story of Bali Maharaj, Shukracharya. And in that story, 8th canto, Lord Vishnu asked Shukracharya, what wrong did Bali Maharaj do? And then he comes up with this really nice verse. Yeah. And I'd like to share that with you.
Please do.
Mantratas tantratas chidram desha kalarha vastutaha sarvam karoti nischidram anusankirtanam tava. It says, there may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regulative principles, and moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, and person and paraphernalia. But when your lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. So this is really nice instruction from Shukracharya. Even though he's the demigod, spiritual master of the demons, he comes up with a really nice instruction. You know?
Yeah, he's not, I mean, he's intelligent, but spiritually and materially both. But in this particular pastime, he was pulled by his material side, you know, for security. But it's very nice verse. Thank you for reading it.
It just shows that Krishna, like you were saying, he purifies everything, purified Putana,
yes,
of all sins, but his holy name also is, by chanting his holy names, Krishna is present and purifies
everybody. Very, yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes. Passing the...
Regarding the pastime Bali Maharaj and his you mentioned some point that he didn't surrender his intelligence, he surrendered through his intelligence.
Correct, like, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
So just wondering if you can expand on that a little bit, that point.
Well, I mean to say, we follow Shastra, Guru and Sadhu, isn't it? But even the Sadhu and Guru, they rely on the Shastra to teach. They can't deviate from the scriptures. So in that sense, Bali Maharaj was well versed in the scriptures. And as soon as Shukracharya gave that instruction, immediately he knew that he was off. So he didn't surrender his intelligence. Oh, I have to follow the Guru no matter what. No? I'll tell you one story. Many years ago in New York, one devotee married, I think, a Japanese woman, and she was lying that she was saying she was Toyota's granddaughter or something. It was all lie, you know, but, and, I mean, they were literally Maya, and this woman wanted to eat chicken, so she was offering the deity's chicken. I mean, big offense, of course. But the devotees didn't say anything. So Prabhupada chastised them later when he found out everything. He said, you should not be blind followers, you know. If you see something wrong, you should react. You know? Like Prabhupada once was touring the property Mayapur. And he, with the managers and other devotees, so he passed in front of the bathrooms and they were dirty. So he called the manager, why these bathrooms are dirty? He was giving excuse, oh, sorry Prabhupada, but the Bengali's devotee don't know how to use the Western toilets. Prabhupada didn't accept the excuse, said, why you don't teach them then, how to keep them clean, you know? And then Prabhupada kept walking and he passed in front of Tulsi plant, you know? So Prabhupada stopped. And the devotee stopped too, and he looked and he saw a lota next to the tulsi plants, you know. And in front of that there was a bathroom. So Prabhupada, one brahmachari, go upstairs and see if the bathroom has a lota or not. So brahmachari ran upstairs, came back, no Prabhupada, there is no lota there. Prabhupada, see, just see, they're using the bathroom lota to water the tulsi plant. And nobody noticed, only he noticed. So later in the class Prabhupada gave that morning, he said, when somebody in the mode of goodness sees something in the mode of ignorance, he reacts. No, he reacts. This is not correct. But if somebody is in ignorance and sees something in ignorance, he doesn't react. See? So not to surrender our intelligence means we surrender through the intelligence, meaning we don't give up our God-given intelligence, you know. We receive knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and through that knowledge we act intelligently. So even if some, you know, authority in the movement asks you something which is according to the scriptures off, you don't have to follow it. Means you don't surrender your intelligence. You surrender through your intelligence. Is that clear enough? Yes.
But isn't there danger of causing aparad?
Danger of committing offense.
Yes.
Well, I mean to say, there was no offense on the part of Bali Maharaj disobeying his guru, because the guru was going against the scriptures.
I mean, for us,
the same thing apply. The same principle apply. I mean, if you don't know. If you call a thief, that's an offense. I mean, it's not an offense. But if you call a thief if somebody's honest, then that's an offense. Understand? So if somebody's a thief, you call him a thief, you're not offending. But if you're calling a thief somebody who's not a thief, who's honest, then that's an aparad. So before saying anything, you have to make sure that it is true, you know, 100%. You know the story of, what is the name, that Greek philosopher, Socrates, once a man came to him, said, "Oh, I have to tell you some very bad news about your good friend." Socrates said, "Before you tell me anything, let me ask you three questions. Are you 100% sure it is true?" "And no, I'm not. I can't be completely sure because somebody told me." All right. And second questions. Do you think, is there anything I can do about it? I don't think so. The thing already happened, apparently. Okay. The third question. Is going to give me any benefit? Bring me any benefit? I don't think so. So if it is not sure, it is truthful. There's nothing I can do about it. And it's going to give me any benefit. So why you tell me anything? Just don't say anything. Understand? So yes, we have to be careful not to offend anyone. But I mean to say, we have to be completely sure that it is true before saying or doing anything. No? But to call a spade, nothing wrong with that. No? All right, question here.
Putana, you said, achieved the position of a nurse in the spiritual world.
Yes.
So, how to reconcile that? Because, you know, great devotees, they perform lifetimes of austerity, and here's a demon. She's coming to kill Krishna, and Krishna promotes her. Is there some other, or some history also you mentioned, but...
The history is that in her past life, she was assured by the Lord in her heart that your desire will be fulfilled, the desire to have him as a son. So she had very strong desire when she saw Vamanadeva to have him as a son, as her son. So the Lord agreed. He confirmed in her heart, your desire will be fulfilled. So that was good enough for her to receive the mercy. Mm-hmm. And that also proves how merciful Krishna is. How kind he is. Yes, Govinda Prabhu.
Just wanted to add to that point that she wasn't in the association of Bali Maharaj by accident.
Yeah, of course.
Previously, so she must have performed heaps and piles of punya and spiritual sadhana, whatever it took her.
Yeah, definitely.
To be in that, so it's not, these are not ordinary personalities like us.
Definitely.
To be in that assembly. So.
I mean, just to see Vamanadeva, she has to have done thousands of austerities.
It wasn't an accident.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, there's a story when Krishna entered Mathura, Dobi, laundry man, Krishna approached him and asked him for some nice clothes for him and Balaram. But he was a servant of Kamsa. So he became angry. "Oh, this belonged to King Kamsa. How you dare to ask this for yourself?" So Krishna gave him the opportunity to do some service. And this meant to see Krishna. He did many lifetimes of austerities to be able to see Krishna. But because he didn't have bhakti, he could not appreciate. He could not appreciate the offer. He denied Krishna. Then Krishna chopped off his head. Okay, he got impersonal liberation. But I mean to say. But unless there is bhakti in it, and put on her past life, she got some bhakti for Vamanadeva, you know. Sincere, deep, profound, you know, feeling she had. And because of the intensity of the feeling, that also was very important point for her desire to be fulfilled. It wasn't just like, okay, I want to have him. No, it was a real, deep, profound desire. So when desire is, you know, the secret of success in a spiritual life is explained by Rupa Goswami as laulyam, extreme hankering, you know, extreme hankering to serve the Lord, to please Him. So she had that. And because of that, she got the mercy. Yes, Kishore Prabhu.
So, if bhakti is purifying, how come in the past life Putana practiced some sincere bhakti and next life she is a demoness?
She didn't practice any bhakti. She didn't practice any bhakti. She has a feeling to serve the Lord as mother. She had this feeling. She didn't do anything. They just had the feeling. But because she also wanted to poison him afterward, so the two feelings has to be fulfilled, and that's why she appeared as Putana. But Krishna is so kind and merciful that he gave her her utmost desire and free her from the evil mentality she had by killing her. That is his mercy.
Thanks for the clarification.
You're welcome. Thank you all. I'm very happy to have visited Chicago for a long time. I'm leaving this evening, so Krishna willing, I may visit sometime next year. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Bol. Gracias.